a bad word.
I guess I did. Tell him the joke.
Avery looked at Luke.
Okay. The big moron and the little moron were standing on a bridge, see? And the big moron fell off. Why didn't the little one?
Luke considered telling Avery that people no longer talked about morons in polite society, but since it was clear that polite society did not exist here, he just said,
I give up. Because he was a little moron. Get it?
Sure.
Why did the chicken cross the road? To get to the other side? No, because she was a dumb cluck. Now go to sleep.
Avery started to say something else. Maybe another joke had come to mind, but Kalisha hushed him. She went on stroking his hair. Her lips were moving. Avery's eyes grew heavy. The lids went down, slowly rose, went down again, and rose even more slowly. Next time, they stayed down.
Were you just doing something? Luke asked. Singing him a lullaby my mom used to sing me.
She spoke barely above a whisper, but there was no mistaking the amazement and pleasure in her voice.
I couldn't carry a tune in a bucket, but when it's mind to mind, the melody doesn't seem to matter.
I have an idea he's not exactly too intelligent, Luke said. She gave him a long look that made his face heat up, as it had when she caught him staring at Helen's legs and busted him on it.
For you, the whole world must not seem exactly too intelligent.
No, I'm not that way, Luke protested. I just meant ease up.
I know what you meant, but it's not brains he's lacking.
Not exactly.
TP, as strong as he's got, might not be a good thing. When you don't know what people are thinking, you have to start early when it comes to,
picking up cues?
Yeah, that. Ordinary people have to survive by looking at faces and judging the tone of voice they're hearing as well as the words. It's like growing teeth, so you can chew something tough. This poor little shit is like Thumper in that Disney cartoon. Any teeth he's got aren't good for much more than grass. Does that make sense?
Luke said it did. Kalisha sighed.
The Institute's a bad place for a Thumper. But maybe it doesn't matter, since we all go to back half eventually.
How much TP has he got, compared, say, to you?
A ton more. They have this thing they measure, BDNF. I saw it on Dr. Hendrick's laptop one time, and I think it's a big deal, maybe the biggest.
You're the brainiac. Do you know what that is?
Luke didn't, but intended to find out.
If they didn't take his computer away first, that was.
Whatever it is, this kid's must be over the moon. I talked to him. It was real telepathy.
But you must have been around other TPs, even if it's rarer than TK. Maybe not in the outside world, but here for sure.
You don't get it. Maybe you can't. That's like listening to a stereo with the sound turned way down, or listening to people talk out on the patio while you're in the kitchen with the dishwasher running. Sometimes it's not there at all, just falls completely out of the mix.
This was the real deal, like in a science fiction movie.
You have to take care of him after I'm gone, Luke. He's a goddamn Thumper, and it's no surprise he doesn't act his age. He's had an easy cruise up to now.
What resonated with Luke was, after I'm gone.
Has anyone said anything to you about going to back half? Maureen, maybe?
No one needs to. I didn't get a single one of their bullshit tests yesterday.
No shots, either. That's a sure sign. Nick's going, too. George and Iris may be here a little longer.
She gently gripped the back of Luke's neck, producing another of those tingles.
I'm going to be your sister for a minute, Luke. Your soul sister. So listen to me. If the only thing you like about Punk Rock Girl is how she wiggles when she walks, keep it that way. It's bad to get too involved with people here. It fucks you up when they go away, and they all do. But you need to take care of this one for as long as you can. When I think of Tony, or Zeke, or that bitch Winona hitting Avery, it makes me want to cry.
I'll do what I can, Luke said.
but I hope you'll be here a lot longer. I'd miss you.
Thanks, but that's exactly what I'm talking about.
They sat quiet for a while. Luke supposed he would have to go soon, but he didn't want to yet. He wasn't ready to be alone.
I think I can help Maureen.
He spoke in a low voice, hardly moving his lips.
With those credit card bills. But I'd have to talk to her.
Her eyes opened wide at that, and she smiled.
Really? That would be great.
Now she put her lips to his ear, causing fresh shivers. He was afraid to look at his arms in case they had broken out in goosebumps.
Make it soon. She's got her week off coming up in a day or two.
Now she placed her hand, oh God, high up on his leg. Territory Luke's mother did not even visit these days.
After she comes back, she's somewhere else for 3 weeks. You might see her in the halls or in the break room, but that's all. She won't talk about it, even where it's safe to talk. So it just about has to be back half.
She removed her lips from his ear and her hand from his thigh, leaving Luke to wish fervently that she had other secrets to impart.
Go on back to your room, she said.
And the little gleam in her eye made him think she was not unaware of the effect she'd had on him.
Try to catch some winks.
7.
He awoke from deep and dreamless sleep to loud knocking on his door. He sat up, looking around wildly, wondering if he had overslept on a school day. The door opened, and a smiling face peered in at him. It was Gladys, the woman who had taken him to get chipped, the one who had told him he was here to serve.
Peek-a-boo, she trilled. Rise and shine. You missed breakfast, but I brought you orange juice. You can drink it while we walk. It's fresh squeezed.
Luke saw the green power light on his new laptop. It had gone to sleep. But if Gladys came in and pushed one of the keys to check on what he'd been surfing, he wouldn't put it past her. She would see H.G. Wells's invisible man with his wrapped head and dark glasses. She wouldn't know what it was. Might think it was just some kind of sci-fi or mystery site, but she probably made reports. If so, they'd go to someone above her pay grade. Someone who was supposed to be curious.
Can I have a minute to put on some pants?
30 seconds. Don't let this OJ get warm now.
She gave him a roguish wink and closed the door. Luke leaped from bed, put on his jeans, grabbed a t-shirt, and woke up the laptop to check the time. He was amazed to see it was 9 o'clock. He never slept that late. For a moment, he wondered if they put something in his food. But if that was the case, he wouldn't have awakened in the middle of the night. It's shock, he thought.
I'm still trying to process this thing, get my head around it.
He killed the computer, knowing any efforts he made to hide Mr. Griffin would mean nothing if they were monitoring his searches. And if they were mirroring his computer, they'd already know he'd found a way to access the New York Times. Of course, if you started thinking that way, everything was futile. Which was probably exactly how the minions of Sigsby wanted him to think. Him and every other kid kept prisoner in here. If they knew, they'd already have taken the computer away, he told himself. And if they were mirroring my box, wouldn't they know the wrong name is on the welcome screen? That seemed to make sense. But maybe they were just giving him more rope. That was paranoid. But the situation was paranoid. When Gladys opened the door again, he was sitting on the bed and putting on his sneakers.
Good job!
She cried, as if Luke were a 3-year-old who had just managed to dress himself for the first time. Luke was liking her less and less, but when she gave him the juice, he gulped it down. 8. This time, when she waved her card, she told the elevator to take them to sea level.
Gosh, what a pretty day,
she exclaimed as the car began to descend. This seemed to be her standard conversation opener. Luke glanced at her hands. I see you're wearing a wedding ring. Do you have kids, Gladys? Her smile became cautious.
That's between me, myself, and I.
I just wondered if you did, how you'd like them locked up in a place like this.
See, said the soft female voice. This is See.
No smile on Gladys's face as she escorted him out, holding his arm a little tighter than absolutely necessary. I also wondered how you live with yourself. Guess that's a little personal, huh?
Enough, Luke. I brought you juice. I didn't have to do that.
And what would you say to your kids if anyone found out what's going on in here? If it got, you know, on the news? How would you explain it to them? She walked faster, almost hauling him along. But there was no anger on her face. If there had been, he would have at least had the dubious comfort of knowing he'd gotten through to her. But no, there was only blankness. It was a doll's face. They stopped at C-17. The shelves were loaded with medical and computer equipment. There was a padded chair that looked like a movie theater seat, and behind it, mounted on a steel post, was something that looked like a projector. At least there were no straps on the arms of the chair. A tech was waiting for them. Zeke, according to the name tag on his blue top. Luke knew the name. Maureen had said he was one of the mean ones.
Hey there, Luke, Zeke said. Are you feeling serene?
Unsure of how to reply, Luke shrugged.
Not gonna make trouble? That's what I'm getting at, sport.
No, no trouble.
Good to hear.
Zeke opened a bottle filled with blue liquid. There was a sharp whiff of alcohol, and Zeke produced a thermometer that looked at least a foot long. Surely not, but...
Drop trow and bend over that chair, Luke. Forearms on the seat.
Not with Gladys here, he meant to say, but the door to C-17 was closed. Gladys was gone. Maybe to preserve my modesty, Luke thought, but probably because she had enough of my shit. Which would have cheered him up if not for the glass rod which would soon, he felt sure, be exploring previously unplumbed depths of his anatomy. It looked like the kind of thermometer a vet might use to take a horse's temperature.
Not with what?
He wagged the thermometer back and forth like a majorette's baton.
Not with this? Sorry, sport. Gotta be. Orders from headquarters, you know?
Wouldn't a fever strip be easier? Luke said. I bet you could get one at CVS for a buck and a half. Even less with your discount card.
Save your wise mouth for your friends. Drop trow and bend over the chair, or I'll do it for you, and you won't like it.
Luke walked slowly to the chair, unbuttoned his pants, slid them down, bent over.
Oh, yay, there's that full moon.
Zeke stood in front of him. He had the thermometer in one hand and a jar of Vaseline in the other. He dipped the thermometer into the jar and brought it out. A glob of jelly dangled from the end. To Luke, it looked like the punchline of a dirty joke.
See? Plenty of lube. Won't hurt a bit. Just relax your cheeks and remind yourself that as long as you don't feel both of my hands on you, your backside virginity remains intact.
He circled behind Luke, who stood bent over with his forearms on the seat of the chair and his butt pushed out. He could smell his sweat, strong and rank. He tried to remind himself that he wasn't the first kid to get this treatment in the Institute. It helped a little, but really not all that much. The room was loaded with high-tech equipment, and this man was preparing to take his temperature in the lowest-tech way imaginable.
Why?
To break me down, Luke thought. To make sure I understand that I'm a guinea pig. And when you have guinea pigs, you can get the data you want any old way you want. And maybe they don't even want this particular piece of data. Maybe it's just a way of saying, if we can stick this up your ass, what else can we stick up there? Answer, anything we feel like.
Suspense is killing you, isn't it?
Zeke said from behind him. And the son of a bitch was laughing. 9. After the indignity of the thermometer, which seemed to go on for a long time, Zeke took his blood pressure, put an O2 monitor on his finger, and checked his height and weight. He looked down Luke's throat and up his nose. He noted down the results, humming as he did it. By then, Gladys was back in the room, drinking from a coffee mug with daisies on it and smiling her fake smile.
Time for a shot, Lukey boy, Zeke said. Not gonna give me any trouble, are you?
Luke shook his head. The only thing he wanted right now was to go back to his room and wipe the Vaseline out of his butt. He had nothing to be ashamed of, but he felt ashamed anyway, demeaned. Zeke gave him an injection. There was no heat this time. This time there was nothing but a little pain. There and gone. Zeke looked at his watch, lips moving as he counted off seconds. Luke did the same, only without moving his lips. He'd gotten to 30 when Zeke lowered his arm.
Any nausea?
Luke shook his head.
Got a metallic taste in your mouth?
The only thing Luke could taste was the residue of the orange juice. No.
Okay, good. Now look at the wall. See any dots? Or maybe they look bigger, like circles?
Luke shook his head.
You're telling the truth, sport. Right?
Right. No dots. No circles. Zeke looked into his eyes for several seconds. Luke thought of asking him if he saw any dots in there, and restrained himself. Then he straightened up, made a show of dusting his palms together, and turned to Gladys.
Go on. Get him out of here. Dr. Evans will want him this afternoon for the eye thing.
He gestured at the projector gadget.
4 p.m.
Luke thought about asking what the eye thing was, but he didn't really care. He was hungry. That didn't seem to change no matter what they did to him, at least so far. But what he wanted more than food was to clean himself up. He felt, only the British word adequately described it, buggered.
Now that wasn't so bad, was it?
Gladys asked him as they rode up in the elevator.
A lot of fuss about nothing.
Luke thought of asking her if she would have felt it was a lot of fuss about nothing if it had been her ass. Nikki might have said it, but he wasn't Nikki. She gave him the fake smile he was finding ever more horrible.
You're learning to behave, and that's wonderful. Here's a token. In fact, take two. I'm feeling generous today.
He took them. Later, standing in the shower with his head bent and water running through his hair, he cried some more. He was like Helen in at least one way. He wanted all this to be a dream. He would have given anything, maybe his very soul, if he could wake up to sunlight lying across his bed like a second coverlet and smell frying bacon downstairs. The tears finally dried up, and he began to feel something other than sorrow and loss. Something harder. A kind of bedrock, previously unknown to him. It was a relief to know it was there. This was no dream. It was really happening, and to get out of here no longer seemed enough. That hard thing wanted more. It wanted to expose the whole kidnapping, child-torturing bunch of them. From Mrs. Sigsby all the way down to Gladys with her plastic smiles and Zeke with his slimy rectal thermometer, to bring the Institute down on their heads, as Samson had brought the Temple of Dagon down on the Philistines. He knew this was no more than the resentful, impotent fantasy of a 12-year-old kid, but he wanted it just the same, and if there was any way he could do it, he would. As his father liked to say, it was good to have goals. They could bring you through tough times. 10. By the time he got to the caf, it was empty except for a janitor, Fred, his name tag said, mopping the floor. It was still too early for lunch, but there was a bowl of fruit, oranges, apples, grapes, and a couple of bananas, on a table at the front. Luke took an apple, then went out to the vending machines, and used one of his tokens to get a bag of popcorn. Breakfast of champions, he thought. Mom would have a cow. He took his food into the lounge area and looked out at the playground. George and Iris were sitting at one of the picnic tables playing checkers. Avery was on the trampoline, taking mildly cautious bounces. There was no sign of Nikki or Helen.
I think that's the worst food combo I ever saw, Kalisha said.
He jumped, spilling some of his popcorn out of the bag and onto the floor.
Jeepers, scare a person, why don't you?
Sorry. She squatted, picked up the few spilled pieces of popcorn and tossed them into her mouth.
Off the floor? Luke asked. I can't believe you did that.
5-second rule. According to the National Health Service, that's in England, the 5-second rule is a myth, total bullshit. Does being a genius mean you have a mission to spoil everyone's illusions?
No, I just...
She smiled and stood up. Yanking your chain, Luke. The chickenpox chick is just yanking your chain.
You okay?
Yes.
Did you get the rectal?
Yes.
Let's not talk about it.
Heard that. Want to play cribbage until lunch? If you don't know how to play, I can teach you.
I know how, but I don't want to.
Think I'll go back to my room for a while.
Consider your situation?
Something like that. See you at lunch.
When the ding-dong goes, she said, it's a date. Cheer up, little hero, and gimme 5.
She raised her hand, and Luke saw something pinched between her thumb and index finger. He pressed his white palm to her brown one, and the folded scrap of paper passed from her hand to his. See ya, boy. She headed for the playground. Back in his room, Luke lay down on his bed, turned on his side to face the wall, and unfolded the square of paper. Kalisha's printing was tiny and very neat. Meet Maureen by the ice machine near Avery's room ASAP. Flush this. He crumpled the paper, went into the bathroom, and dropped the note into the bowl as he lowered his pants. He felt ridiculous doing this, like a kid playing spy. At the same time, he didn't feel ridiculous at all. He would have loved to believe there was at least no surveillance in La Maison Duchy, but he didn't quite believe it. The ice machine, where Maureen had spoken to him yesterday. That was sort of interesting. According to Kalisha, there were several places in front half where the audio surveillance worked poorly or not at all, but Maureen seemed to favor that one, maybe because there was no video surveillance there. Maybe it was where she felt safest, possibly because the ice machine was so noisy, and maybe he was judging on too little evidence. He thought about going to the Star Tribune before meeting Maureen and sat down at his computer. He even went as far as Mr. Griffin, but there he stopped. Did he really want to know? To perhaps find out these bastards, these monsters, were lying and his parents were dead? Going to the Trib to check would be a little like a guy wagering his life savings on one spin of the roulette wheel. Not now, he decided. Maybe after the humiliation of the thermometer was a bit further behind him, but not now. If that made him a chicken shit, so be it. He turned off the computer and took a walk to the other wing. Maureen wasn't near the ice machine, but her laundry cart was parked halfway down what Luke now thought of as Avery's hallway, and he could hear her singing something about raindrops. He went to the sound of her voice and saw her putting on fresh sheets in a room decorated with WWF posters of hulking beefcakes and spandex shorts. They all looked mean enough to chew nails and spit out staples.
Hey, Maureen, how are you?
Fine, she said. Back aches a little, but I've got my Motrin.
Want some help?
Thanks, but this is the last room and I'm almost finished. 2 girls, 1 boy. Expected soon. This is the boys' room.
She gestured at the posters and laughed.
As if you didn't know.
Well, I thought I'd get some ice, but there's no bucket in my room.
They're stacked in a cubby next to the bin.
She straightened up, put her hands in the small of her back, and grimaced. Luke heard her spine crackle.
Oh, that's lots better. I'll show you.
Only if it's no trouble.
No trouble at all. Come on. You can push my cart if you want to.
As they went down the hall, Luke thought about his researches into Maureen's problem. One horrifying statistic in particular stuck out. Americans owed over $12 trillion. Money spent but not earned. Just promised. A paradox only an accountant could love. While much of that debt had to do with mortgages on homes and businesses, an appreciable amount led back to those little plastic rectangles everyone kept in their purses and wallets, The Oxycodone of American Consumers. Maureen opened a little cabinet to the right of the ice machine. Can you get one? And save me stooping down? Some inconsiderate somebody pushed every damned bucket all the way to the back. Luke reached. As he did, he spoke in a low voice. Kalisha told me about your problem with the credit cards. I think I know how to fix it, but a lot of it depends on your declared residence. My declared... What state do you live in? She took a quick, furtive look around. We're not supposed to tell any personal stuff to the residents. It would mean my job if anyone found out. More than my job. Can I trust you, Luke? I'll keep my mouth shut. I live over in Vermont. Burlington. That's where I'm going on my outside week. Telling him that seemed to release something inside her, and although she kept the volume down, the words came spilling out. The first thing I have to do when I get off work is delete a bunch of dunning calls from my phone, and when I get home, from the answering machine on that phone. You know, the landline. When the answer machine is full, they leave letters, warnings, threats, in the mailbox or under the door. My car. They can repo that anytime they want. It's a beater, but now they're talking about my house. It's paid off, and no thanks to him. I killed the mortgage with my signing bonus when I came to work here. That's why I came to work here. But they'll take it, and the what-do-you-call-it will be gone. The equity, Luke said, whispering it. Right, that. Color had bloomed in her sallow cheeks, whether of shame or anger, Luke didn't know. And once they have the house, they'll want what's put away. And that money's not for me. Not for me, but they'll take it just the same. They say so. He ran up that much? Luke was astonished. The guy must have been a spending machine. Yes! Keep it down! He held the plastic bucket in one hand and opened the ice machine with the other. Vermont is good. It's not a community property state. What's that mean? Something they don't want you to know about, Luke thought. There's so much they don't want you to know about. Once you're stuck on the flypaper, that's where they want you to stay. He grabbed the plastic scoop inside the door of the ice machine and pretended to be breaking up chunks of ice. The cards he used, were they in his name or yours? His, of course, but they're still dunning me because we're still legally married, and the account numbers are the same. Luke began filling the plastic ice bucket, very slowly. They say they can do that, and it sounds plausible, but they can't. Not legally, not in Vermont, not in most states. If he was using his cards and his signature was on the slips, that's his debt. They say it's ours, both of ours. They lie, Luke said grimly. As for the calls you mentioned, do any of them come after 8 o'clock at night? Her voice dropped to a fierce whisper. Are you kidding? Sometimes they call at midnight. Pay up or the bank's gonna take your house next week. You'll come back to find the locks changed and your furniture out on the lawn. Luke had read about this, and worse. Debt collectors threatening to turn aged parents out of their nursing homes. Threatening to go after young adult children still trying to get some financial traction. Anything to get their percentage of the cash grab. It's good you're away most of the time and those calls go to voicemail. They don't let you have your cell here?
No. God, no. It's locked in my car. Not here. I changed my number once, and they got the new one. How could they do that?
Easily, Luke thought.
Don't delete those calls. Save them. They'll be time-stamped. It's illegal for collection agencies to call clients, that's what they call people like you, clients, after 8 o'clock at night.
He dumped the bucket and began to fill it again, even more slowly. Maureen was looking at him with amazement and dawning hope, but Luke hardly noticed. He was deep in the problem, tracing the lines back to the central point where those lines could be cut.
You need a lawyer. Don't even think about going to one of the quick buck companies that advertise on cable. They'll take you for everything they can and then put you into Chapter 7. You'll never get your credit rating back. You want a straight-arrow Vermont lawyer who specializes in debt relief, knows all about the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, and hates those bloodsuckers. I'll do some research and get you a name.
You can do that?
I'm pretty sure. If they didn't take his computer away first, that was. The lawyer needs to find out which collection agencies are in charge of trying to get the money, the ones that are scaring you and calling in the middle of the night. The banks and credit card companies don't like to give the names of the stooges they use, but unless fair debt's repealed, and there are powerful people in Washington trying to do that, a good lawyer can force them to do it. The people phoning you step over the line all the time. They're a bunch of scumbags working in boiler rooms. Not all that different from the scumbags working here, Luke thought. What are boiler... Never mind. This was going on too long. A good debt relief lawyer will go to the banks with your answering machine tapes and tell them they have two choices. Forgive the debts or go to court, charged with illegal business practices. Banks hate going to court and having people find out they're hiring guys just one step away from leg breakers in a Scorsese movie. You don't think I have to pay? Maureen looked dazed. He looked straight into her tired, too pale face. Did you do anything wrong? She shook her head. But it's so much. He was furnishing his own place in Albany, buying stereos and computers and flat-screen TVs. He's got a dolly, and he's buying her things. He likes casinos, and it's been going on for years. Stupid trusting me didn't know until it was too late. It's not too late. That's what...
Hi, Luke.
Luke jumped, turned, and saw Avery Dixon. Hi. How was the trampoline?
Good. Been boring.
Guess what? I had a shot, and I didn't even cry. Good for you. Want to watch TV up in the lounge until lunch? They have Nickelodeon, Iris Said So, SpongeBob and Rusty Rivets and The Loud House. Not now, Luke said, but you knock yourself out. Avery studied the two of them a moment longer, then headed up the hall. Once he was gone, Luke turned back to Maureen. It's not too late, that's what I'm saying, but you have to move fast. Meet me here tomorrow. I'll have a name for you, somebody good. Somebody with a track record, I promise. This, son, this is too good to be true. He liked her calling him son. It gave him a warm feeling. Stupid, maybe, but still true. It's not, though. What they're trying to do to you is too bad to be true. I really have to go. It's almost lunchtime. I won't forget this, she said, and squeezed his hand. If you can... The doors banged open at the far end of the hall. Luke was suddenly sure he was going to see a couple of caretakers, a couple of the mean ones, Tony and Zeke, maybe, coming for him. They'd take him somewhere and question him about what he and Maureen had been talking about. And if he didn't tell right away, they'd use enhanced interrogation techniques until he spilled everything. He'd be in trouble, but Maureen's trouble might be even worse. Take it easy, Luke, she said. It's just the new residents. Three pink-clad caretakers came through the doors. They were pulling a train of gurneys. They were sleeping girls on the first two, both blonde. On the third was a hulk of a red-haired boy, presumably the WWF fan. All were asleep. As they rolled closer, Luke said, Holy crow, I think those girls are twins. Identicals. You're right. Their names are Gerda and Greta. Now go on and get something to eat. I need to help those fellas get the new ones situated. 11. Avery was sitting in one of the lounge chairs, swinging his feet and eating a Slim Jim as he watched the goings-ons in Bikini Bottom.
I got two tokens for not crying when I got my shot.
Good.
You can have the other one if you want it.
No thanks. You keep it for later.
Okay. SpongeBob is good, but I wish I could go home.
Avery didn't sob or bawl or anything, but tears began to leak from the corners of his eyes.
Yeah, me too. Squish over.
Avery squished over and Luke sat down next to him. It was a tight fit, but that was okay. Luke put an arm around Avery's shoulders and gave him a little hug. Avery responded by putting his head on Luke's shoulder, which touched him in a way he couldn't define and made him feel a little like crying himself.
Guess what? Maureen has a kid,
Avery said. Yeah? You think?
Sure. He was little, but now he's big. Older even than Nikki.
Uh-huh, okay.
It's a secret.
Avery didn't take his eyes from the screen, where Patrick was having an argument with Mr. Krabs.
She's saving money for him.
Really? And you know this how? Avery looked at him.
I just do. Like I know your best friend is Rolf, and you lived on Wilder Smoochie Drive.
Luke gaped at him. Jesus, Avery.
Good, ain't I?
And although there were still tears on his cheeks, Avery giggled. 12. After lunch, George proposed a game of 3-on-3 badminton, he, Nikki, and Helen against Luke, Kalisha, and Iris. George said Nikki's team could even have Avery as a bonus.
He's not a bonus, he's a liability, Helen said,
and waved at a cloud of minges surrounding her.
What's a liability? Avery asked. If you want to know, read my mind, Helen said. Besides, badminton's for pussies who can't play tennis.
Aren't you cheerful company? Kalisha said. Helen, walking toward the picnic tables and games cabinet, hoisted a middle finger over her shoulder without looking back, and pumped it. Iris said it could be Nikki and George against Luke and Kalisha. She, Iris, would ump the sidelines. Avery said he would help. All finding this agreeable, the game began. The score was 10-all when the door to the lounge banged open and the new boy walked out, almost managing a straight line. He looked dazed from whatever drug had been in his system. He also looked pissed off. Luke put him at 6 feet and maybe 16 years of age. He was carrying a considerable belly in front, a food gut that might become a beer gut in adulthood, but his sunburned arms were slabbed with muscle, and he had an awesome set of traps, maybe from lifting. His cheeks were spattered with freckles and acne. His eyes looked pink and irritated. His red hair was standing up in sleek, scruffy patches. They all stopped what they were doing to check him out. Whispering without moving her lips like a con in a prison yard, Kalisha said,
It's the Incredible Bulk.
The new kid stopped by the trampoline and surveyed the others. He spoke slowly, in spaced bursts, as if suspecting those he addressed were primitives with little grasp of English. His accent was southern.
What the fuck is this?
Avery trotted over.
It's the Institute. Hi, I'm Avery. What's your name?
The new kid put the heel of his hand against Avery's chin and shoved. It wasn't particularly hard, almost absent-minded, but Avery went sprawling on one of the cushions surrounding the trampoline, staring up at the new kid with an expression of shocked surprise. The new kid took no notice of him, or the badminton players, or Iris, or Helen, who had paused in the act of dealing herself a hand of solitaire. He seemed to be talking to himself.
What the fuck is this?
He waved irritably at the bugs. Like Luke on his first visit to the playground, New Kid hadn't slathered on any repellent. The minges weren't just swarming. They were lighting on him and sampling his sweat.
Oh, man, Nikki said. You shouldn't have knocked the Avester over like that. He was trying to be nice.
New Kid at last paid some attention. He turned to Nick.
Who the fuck are you?
Nick Wilhelm. Help Avery up.
What?
Nick looked patient. You knocked him over. You help him up. I'll do it, Kalisha said, and hurried to the trampoline. She bent to take Avery's arm, and New Kid pushed her. She missed the springy stuff and sprawled on the gravel, scraping one knee. Nick dropped his badminton racket and walked over to New Kid. He put his hands on his hips. Now you can help them both up. I'm sure you're disoriented as hell, but that's no excuse.
What if I don't?
Nikki smiled. Then I'll fuck you up, fat boy. Helen Sims was looking on with interest from the picnic table. George apparently decided to head for safer territory. He strolled toward the door to the lounge, giving New Kid a wide berth as he did so.
Don't bother with him if he wants to be an asshole, Kalisha said to Nikki. We're okay, Avery, aren't we?
She helped him to his feet and started backing away.
Sure we are,
Avery said, but tears were once more spilling down his chubby cheeks.
Who you calling an asshole, bitch?
Nick said, Must be you, since you're the only asshole here. He took a step closer to New Kid. Luke was fascinated by the contrast. New Kid was a mallet. Nikki was a blade. You need to apologize.
Fuck you and fuck your apology, New Kid said. I don't know what place this is, but I know I'm not staying. Now get out of my face.
You're not going anywhere, Nikki said. You're here for the long haul, just like the rest of us. He smiled without showing his teeth.
Stop it, both of you, Kalisha said. She had her arm around Avery's shoulders, and Luke didn't have to be a mind reader to know what she was thinking, because he was thinking the same thing. New Kid outweighed Nikki by 60 pounds at least, probably more like 80. And although New Kid was carrying plenty of table muscle in front, those arms were slabs.
Last warning, New Kid said. Move or I'll lay you the fuck out.
George seemed to have changed his mind about going inside. Now he was strolling back toward New Kid, not behind him, but to one side. It was Helen who was coming up behind him. Not fast, but with that nice little hip sway Luke so admired, and a small smile of her own. George's face contracted in a frown of concentration, lips pressing together and forehead furrowing. The minges that had been circling both boys suddenly drew together and gusted at New Kid's face as if on an invisible breath of wind. He raised a hand to his eyes, waving at them. Helen dropped to her knees behind him, and Nikki gave the redhead a shove. New Kid went sprawling, half on gravel and half on asphalt. Helen leaped to her feet and pranced away, laughing and pointing.
Nookie's on you, big boy. Nookie's on you. Nookie's all over you.
With a roar of fury, New Kid began getting up. Before he could accomplish that, Nick stepped forward and kicked him in the thigh, hard. New Kid screamed, clutched at his leg, and pulled his knees up to his chest.
Jesus, stop it, Iris cried. Haven't we got enough trouble without this?
The old Luke might have agreed. The new Luke, the Institute Luke, did not. He started it, and maybe he needed it.
I'll get you, New Kid sobbed. I'll get all of you fucking dirty fighters.
His face had gone an alarming red purple. Luke found himself wondering if an overweight 16-year-old could have a stroke and found, appalling but true, that he did not care. Nikki dropped to one knee. You won't get shit, he said. Right now, you need to listen to me, fatso. We're not your problem. They're your problem. Luke looked around and saw three caretakers standing shoulder to shoulder just outside the door of the lounge. Joe, Haddad, and Gladys. Haddad no longer looked friendly, and Gladys's plastic smile was gone. All three were holding black gadgets with wires sticking out of them. They weren't moving in yet, but they were ready to. Because you don't let the test animals hurt each other, Luke thought. That's one thing you don't do. The test animals are valuable. Nikki said, Help me with this bastard, Luke. Luke took one of New Kid's arms and got it around his neck. Nick did the same with the other. The kid's skin was hot and oily with sweat. He was gasping for breath between clenched teeth. Together, Luke and Nikki hauled him to his feet.
Nikki, Joe called. Everything all right? Shitstorm over?
All over, Nikki said.
It better be, Haddad said.
He and Gladys went back inside. Joe stood where he was, still holding his black gadget.
We're totally okay, Kalisha said. It wasn't a real shitstorm, just a little disagreement, Helen said. Call it a fart skirmish.
He didn't mean anything bad, Iris said. He was just upset.
There was genuine kindness in her voice, which made Luke a little ashamed about feeling so happy when Nikki put his foot to the new kid's leg.
I'm gonna puke, New Kid announced.
Not on the trampoline, you're not, Nikki said. We use that thing. Come on, Luke. Help me get him over by the fence.
New Kid began to make noises, his considerable belly heaving.
Luke and Nikki walked him toward the fence between the playground and the woods. They got there just in time. New Kid put his head against the chain-linked diamonds and spewed through them, giving up the last remains of whatever he'd eaten on the outside, when he had been Free Kid instead of New Kid.
"Ew," Helen said. "Somebody had creamed corn. How gross is that?"
"Any better?" Nikki asked. New Kid nodded. "Finished?" New Kid shook his head and upchucked again, this time with less strength.
"I think."
He cleared his throat and more goo sprayed.
"Jesus,"
Nikki said, wiping his cheek. "Do you serve towels with your showers?"
"I think I'm gonna pass out."
"You're not," Luke said. He actually wasn't sure of this, but thought it best to stay positive. "Come over here in the shade." They got him to the picnic table. Kalisha sat down beside him and told him to lower his head. He did so without argument. "What's your name?" Nikki asked.
"Harry Cross."
The fight had gone out of him. He sounded tired and humbled.
"I'm from Selma. That's in Alabama. I don't know how I got here, or what's happening, or nothing."
"We can tell you some stuff," Luke said, "but you need to cut the shit. You need to get right. This place is bad enough without fighting among ourselves."
"And you need to apologize to Avery," George said. There was none of the class clown in him now. "That's how the getting right starts."
"That's okay," Avery said. "He didn't hurt me."
Kalisha took no notice.
"Apologize."
Harry Cross looked up. He swabbed a hand across his flushed and homely face.
"Sorry I knocked you over, kid."
He looked around at the others.
"Okay?"
"Half okay." Luke pointed at Kalisha. "Her too." Harry heaved a sigh.
"Sorry, whatever your name is."
"It's Kalisha. If we get on more friendly terms, which don't seem too likely as of this moment, you can call me Shaw."
"Just don't call her Sport," Luke said. George laughed and clapped him on the back.
"Whatever,"
Harry muttered. He wiped something else from his chin. Nikki said,
"Now that the excitement's over, why don't we finish the goddamn badminton game?"
"Hello, girls,"
Iris said.
"Do you want to come over here?"
Luke looked around. Joe was gone. There were two little blonde girls standing where he had been. They were holding hands and wearing identical expressions of dazed terror. Everything about them was identical except for their t-shirts, one green and one red. Luke thought of Dr. Seuss, Thing One and Thing Two.
"Come on," Kalisha said. "It's all right. The trouble's over."
If only that were true, Luke thought. 13. At 4:15 that afternoon, Luke was in his room reading more about Vermont lawyers who specialized in the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. So far, no one had asked him why he was so interested in this particular subject. Nobody had asked him about H.G. Wells's Invisible Man either. Luke supposed he could devise some sort of test to discover if they were monitoring him. Googling ways to commit suicide would probably work. And then decided that would be nuts. Why kick a sleeping dog? And since it didn't make a whole lot of difference to life as he was now living it, it was probably better not to know. There came a brisk rap on the door. It opened before he could call, "Come in." It was a caretaker. She was tall and dark-haired, the name tag on her pink top proclaiming her Priscilla. "The eye thing, right?" Luke asked, turning off his laptop.
"Right. Let's go."
No smile, no chirpy good cheer. After Gladys, Luke found this a relief. They went back to the elevator, then down to sea level. "How deep does this place go?" Luke asked. Priscilla glanced at him. "None of your business." "I was only making con-" "Well, don't. Just shut up." Luke shut up. Back in good old room C-17, Zeke had been replaced by a tech whose name tag said Brandon. There were also two men in suits present, one with an iPad and one with a clipboard. No name tags for them, so Luke guessed they were doctors. One was extremely tall, with a gut that put Harry Cross's to shame. He stepped forward and held out his hand.
"Hello, Luke. I'm Dr. Hendricks, Chief of Medical Operations."
Luke simply looked at the outstretched hand, feeling no urge at all to take it. He was learning all sorts of new behaviors. It was interesting, in a rather horrible way. Dr. Hendricks gave an odd sort of hee-hawing laugh, half exhaled and half inhaled.
"That's all right. Perfectly all right. This is Dr. Evans, in charge of ophthalmology operations."
He did the exhale-inhale hee-haw again. So Luke surmised ophthalmology operations was doctor humor of some sort. Dr. Evans, a small man with a fussy mustache, did not laugh at the joke, or even smile. Nor did he offer to shake hands.
"So, you're one of our new recruits. Welcome. Have a seat, please."
Luke did as he was told. Sitting in the chair was certainly better than being bent over it with his bare butt sticking out. Besides, he was pretty sure what this was. He'd had his eyes examined before. In films, the nerdy kid genius always wore thick glasses, but Luke's vision was 20/20, at least so far. He felt more or less at ease until Hendricks approached him with another hypo. His heart sank at the sight of it.
"Don't worry. Just another quick prick."
Hendricks hee-hawed again, showing buck teeth.
"Lots of shots, just like in the army."
"Sure, because I'm a conscript," Luke said.
"Correct. Absolutely correct. Hold still."
Luke took the injection without protesting. There was no flash of heat, but then something else began happening. Something bad. As Priscilla bent to put on one of those clear spots, he started to choke.
"I can't..."
Swallow was what he wanted to say, but he couldn't. His throat locked shut.
"You're okay," Hendricks said. "It will pass."
That sounded good, but the other doctor was approaching with a tube, which he apparently meant to jam down Luke's throat if it became necessary. Hendricks put a hand on his shoulder.
"Give him a few seconds."
Luke stared at them desperately, spit running down his chin. Sure, they would be the last faces he would see. And then his throat unlocked. He whooped in a great gasp of air.
"See," Hendricks said. "All fine. Jim, no need to intubate."
"What? What did you do to me?"
"Nothing at all. You're fine."
Dr. Evans handed the plastic tube to Brandon and took Hendricks's place. He shone a light into Luke's eyes, then took a small ruler and measured the distance between them.
"No corrective lenses?"
"I want to know what that was. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't swallow."
"You're fine," Evans said. "Swallowing like a champ. Color going back to normal. Now do you or don't you wear corrective lenses?"
"I don't," Luke said.
"Good. Good for you. Look straight ahead, please."
Luke looked at the wall. The sensation of having forgotten how to breathe was gone. Brandon pulled down a white screen, then dimmed the lights.
"Keep looking straight ahead," Dr. Evans said. "If you look away once, Brandon is gonna slap you. If you look away a second time, he'll shock you. Low voltage, but very painful. Do you understand?"
"Yes," Luke said. He swallowed. It was okay. His throat felt normal, but his heart was still double-timing. "Does the AMA know about this?"
"You need to shut up," Brandon said.
Shut up seems to be the default position around here, Luke thought. He told himself the worst was over. Now it was just an eye test. Other kids had been through this, and they were fine. But he kept swallowing, verifying that, yes, he could do it. They would project the eye chart, he would read it, and this would be over.
"Straight ahead," Evans almost crooned. "Eyes on the screen and nowhere else."
Music started. violins playing classical stuff. Meant to be soothing, Luke supposed.
Pris, turn on the projector, Evans said.
Instead of an eye chart, a blue spot appeared in the middle of the screen, pulsing slightly, as if it had a heartbeat. A red spot showed up below it, making him think of Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave.
Next came a green spot. The red and green spots pulsed in sync with the blue one. Then all three began to flash off and on. Others began to appear, first one by one, then two by two, then by the dozens. Soon the screen was crowded with hundreds of flashing colored dots.
At the screen, Evans crooned. The screen. Nowhere else.
So if I don't see them on my own, you project them? Kind of like priming the pump or something?
That doesn't...
Shut up. Priscilla this time. Now the dots began to swirl. They chased each other madly, some seeming to spiral, some to flock, some forming circles that rose and fell and crisscrossed. The violins were speeding up, the light classical tune turning into something like hoedown music. The dots weren't just moving now. They'd become a Times Square electronic billboard with its circuits fried and having a consequent nervous breakdown. Luke started to feel like he was having a breakdown. He thought of Harry Cross puking through the chain link fence and knew he was going to do the same thing if he kept looking at those madly racing colored dots. And he didn't want to puke. It would end up in his lap. Brandon slapped him good and hard. The noise was like a small firecracker going off both close and far away.
Look at the screen, sport.
Something warm was running over his upper lip. Son of a bitch got my nose as well as my cheek, Luke thought, but it didn't seem important. Those swirling dots were getting into his head, invading his brain like encephalitis or meningitis. Some kind of itis, anyway.
Okay, Pris, switch off, Evan said.
But she must not have heard him because the dots didn't go away. They bloomed and shriveled, each bloom bigger than the last. Boosh out and zip back in. Boosh and zip. They were going 3D, coming off the screen, rushing toward him, rushing back, rushing forward, rushing. He thought Brandon was saying something about Priscilla, but that had to be in his head, right? And was someone really screaming? If so, could it be him?
Good boy, Luke. That's good. You're doing fine.
Evan's voice droning from far away, from a drone high in the stratosphere, maybe from the other side of the moon. More colored dots. They weren't just on the screen now. They were on the walls, swirling on the ceiling, all around him, inside him. It came to Luke in the last few seconds before he passed out that they were replacing his brain. He saw his hands fly up among the dots of light. Saw them jigging and racing on his skin, became aware that he was thrashing from side to side in the chair. He tried to say, I'm having a seizure, you're killing me, but all that came out of his mouth was a wretched, gargling sound. Then the dots were gone. He was falling out of the chair. He was falling into darkness. And that was a relief. Oh God, what a relief. He was slapped out of unconsciousness. They weren't hard slaps, not like the one that had made his nose bleed, if that had indeed happened, but they weren't love taps either. He opened his eyes and found himself on the floor. It was a different room. Priscilla was down on one knee beside him. She was the one administering the slaps. Brandon and the two doctors stood by, watching. Hendricks still had his iPad, Evans his clipboard.
He's awake, Priscilla said. Can you stand up, Luke?
Luke didn't know if he could or not. 4 or 5 years ago, he'd come down with strep throat and run a high fever. He felt now as he had then, as if half of him had slipped out of his body and into the atmosphere. His mouth tasted foul, and the latest injection site itched like crazy. He could still feel his throat swelling shut. How horrible that had been. Brandon didn't give Luke a chance to test his legs, simply grabbed his arm and hauled him to his feet. Luke stood there, swaying.
What's your name? Hendricks asked.
Luke. Lucas. Ellis. The word seemed to come not from his mouth, but from the detached half of him floating over his head. He was tired. His face throbbed from the repeated slaps, and his nose hurt. He raised a hand. It drifted up slowly as if through water, rubbed the skin above his lip, and looked without surprise at the flakes of dried blood on his finger.
How long was I out?
Sit him down, Hendricks said. Brandon took one of his arms, Priscilla the other. They led him to a chair, a plain kitchen chair with no straps, thank God. It was placed in front of a table. Evans was sitting behind it on another kitchen chair. He had a stack of cards in front of him. They were as big as paperback books and had plain blue backs.
I want to go back to my room, Luke said.
His voice still didn't seem to be coming from his mouth, but it was a little closer. Maybe.
I want to lie down. I'm sick.
Your disorientation will pass, Hendricks said. Although it might be wise to skip supper. For now, I want you to pay attention to Dr. Evans. We have a little test for you. Once it's finished, you can go back to your room and, decompress.
Evans picked up the first card and looked at it.
What is it?
A card, Luke said.
Save the jokes for your YouTube site, Priscilla said and slapped him.
It was a much harder slap than the ones she'd used to bring him around. Luke's ear began to ring, but at least his head felt a little clearer. He looked at Priscilla and saw no hesitation, no regret, zero empathy, nothing. Luke realized he wasn't a child at all to her. She had made some crucial separation in her mind. He was a test subject. You made it do what you wanted, and if it didn't, you administered what the psychologist called negative reinforcement. And when the tests were over, you went down to the break room for coffee and Danish and talked about your own kids, who were real kids, or bitched about politics, sports, whatever. But hadn't he known that already? He supposed so. Only knowing a thing and having the truth of it read in your skin were two different things. Luke could see a time coming, and it wouldn't be long, when he would cringe every time someone raised an open hand to him, even if it was only to shake or give a high five. Evans laid the card carefully aside and took another from the stack.
How about this one, Luke?
I told you. I don't know. How can I know what...
Priscilla slapped him again. The ringing was stronger now, and Luke began to cry.
He couldn't help it. He had thought the Institute was a nightmare, but this was the real nightmare. Being half out of his body and asked to say what was on cards he couldn't see and getting slapped when he said he didn't know.
Try, Luke, Hendricks said into the ear that wasn't ringing.
I want to go back to my room. I'm tired, and I feel sick.
Evan set the second card aside and picked up a third one.
What is it?
You've made a mistake, Luke said. I'm TK, not TP. Maybe Kalisha could tell you what's on those cards, and I'm sure Avery could, but I'm not TP.
Evans picked up a fourth.
What is it? No more slaps. Tell me, or this time Brandon will shock you with his zapstick and it will hurt. You probably won't have another seizure, but you might. So tell me, Luke, what is it?
The Brooklyn Bridge, he shouted. The Eiffel Tower. Brad Pitt in a tuxedo, a dog taking a shit, the Indy 500, I don't know!
He waited for the zapstick. Some kind of taser, he supposed. Maybe it would crackle, or maybe it would make a humming sound. Maybe it would make no sound at all, and he'd just jerk and fall on the floor, twitching and drooling. Instead, Evan set the card aside and motioned Brandon to step away. Luke felt no relief. He thought, I wish I was dead. Dead and out of this.
Priscilla, Hendricks said, take Luke back to his room.
Yes, doctor. Bran, help me with him as far as the elevator.
By the time they got him there, Luke felt reintegrated again, his mind slipping back into gear. Had they really turned off the projector, and he still kept seeing the dots? You made a mistake. Luke's mouth and throat were very dry. I'm not what you people call a TP. You know that, right? Whatever, Priscilla said indifferently. She turned to Brandon and with a real smile became a new person. I'll see you later, right? Brandon grinned. You bet. He turned to Luke, suddenly made a fist and drove it at Luke's face. He stopped an inch short of Luke's nose, but Luke cringed and cried out. Brandon laughed heartily, and Priscilla gave him an indulgent boys-will-be-boys smile. Shake her easy, Luke, Brandon said and headed off down the sea-level hall in a modified swagger, his holstered zapstick bumping against his hip. Back in the main corridor, what Luke now understood to be the residence wing, the little girls, Gerda and Greta, were standing and watching with wide, frightened eyes. They were holding hands and clutching dolls as identical as they were. They reminded Luke of twins in some old horror movie. Priscilla accompanied him to his door and walked away without saying anything. Luke went in, saw that no one had come to take away his laptop, and collapsed on his bed without even taking off his shoes. There he slept for the next 5 hours. 15. Mrs. Sigsby was waiting when Dr. Hendricks, aka Donkey Kong, entered the private suite adjacent to her office. She was perched on the small sofa. He handed her a file.
I know you worship hard copy, so here you are. Much good it'll do you.
She didn't open it.
It can't do me good or harm, Dan. These are your tests, your secondary experiments, and they don't seem to be panning out.